Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT. On this Wednesday evening, we are presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, and he is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Last time I'll get to talk to you for a couple of days. It's going to take a little time off.
Actually, it's going to be more than a couple days because I'll be gone the first couple days of next week as well.
That's right.
So you will have to, I can send you a postcard.
Thank you so much. Greatly appreciate that. You've got to get all revved up because we've got spring practice, pro day all coming up right around the corner.
And the NFL Combine.
NFL Combine, that's right. You're going to be heading down to Indianapolis for that.
That's true.
So you got a busy schedule, so you're going to pump the tires a little bit. Pump the brakes. Just slow down a little bit. I can't blame you. All right, so we'll put you to work tonight for the next 52 minutes here on WSBT Radio. We're going to talk a little NFL draft just because a new mock came out. Mel Kiper, draft expert from ESPN, has dropped a Notre Dame player significantly in his mock. We'll tell you who that is and is it a big deal. We'll talk about that coming up in just a couple of moments. Your home of the Colts this fall is WSBT Radio. There's a couple of pieces of Colts information we'll pass along. Bottom of this hour, Notre Dame basketball. Where do the Irish stand for the postseason? Mike Bray talked about that the other night. We will play back his comments. My five question of the day. I went with this for Eric. The top five traits from the 2012 Notre Dame football team that could show up in the 2018 Fighting Irish. What's the key word? Could. So we'll get to that list coming up in about 40 minutes. Next hour, without a doubt, without a doubt, out of all the silly craziness that's going on right now in trying to improve the pace of play in Major League Baseball, I have a piece of audio to play for you that will pretty much be the end of all. I mean, this is the most ridiculous idea that I've heard, but I have a feeling there might be some people that actually love this idea. But I'm a traditionalist, so I'm going to go to this idea within the first 5 seconds of the audio playing. So hope you'll stick around. An hour from now, I will play that audio, and you're either going to laugh your tail off, or you're going to be like, you know what? I'll watch more baseball if this happens. So we'll do that coming up.
Wow. I can't wait to hear what that is.
Oh, you will be just like me. You're going to be like, you got to be kidding me. All right. In about an hour and 20 minutes, Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs joins us for his Wednesday visit on the Chicago Cubs system. Today, we focus on the third base position, and good luck to all the minor leaguers in the Cubs system right now trying to unseat Chris Bryant as the starting third baseman for the Chicago Cubs. And at the end of next hour, we'll play back an interview we had with Terry Joseph, the new Notre Dame safeties coach, all coming up here on 96.1 FM WSBT. You can listen to us on the live stream at WSBTRadio.com. And if you're listening to us on the podcast, we appreciate that as well. Go to the iTunes Store, Google Play Store, and search WSBT and get signed up for the good old podcast. Obviously, safe travels to everyone tonight. You know the situation. We have some really tough driving situations in many parts of our area. There are travel advisories, travel warnings due to record river levels. We have states of emergency across the area. So please just be on the lookout. And of course, besides everything else, there are some monster potholes out there, so be careful as you're driving along on this rough travel Wednesday. All right, to some football conversation. We begin with NFL Mock Draft 2.0 put out by Mel Kiper, longtime draft expert for ESPN, one of many draft mocks you will see over the next couple of months leading to the NFL draft. Of course, the combine's coming up very, very soon, and that almost resets everything because then you're going to get all the particulars, the weight, the height, jumping, 40-yard dash. There's going to be a lot of changes to everything. So that's why I'm very hesitant to get overly excited about what we're going to talk about, but I think it is worth noting at the very least. Did I set that up okay?
That's beautiful.
Okay. Well, thank you. First, let's just say this. In the mock draft, nothing changed with the Colts. A lot of people have them taking defensive end Bradley Chubb from NC State. I still think they may move out of that spot just because of the need of quarterbacks. And with all these quarterbacks in this class, that number three spot could be very, very valuable for Indianapolis. Now, nothing changed also at number seven in Kiper's newest mock draft. He has the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking Notre Dame offensive guard Quentin Nelson. Greg Cosell, the son of Howard Cosell, he has done a great job of breaking down NFL film. He's made quite a career out of that. A lot of people respect his opinions, and he went goo-goo over Quentin Nelson on a radio show earlier today, just calling him one of the more amazing offensive guards that he has run across. But here's the news that I think that caught a lot of Irish fans' attention. If you saw this list today, Mock Draft 1.0, Mel Kiper had the Minnesota Vikings at 11 taking Fighting Irish offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey. Mock Draft 2.0 released earlier today. Mike McGlinchey is nowhere found in Kiper's first round. He's now a second round prospect in the eyes of Mel Kiper Jr. Now, a little background. The mock draft assigns players to teams by draft order. But when you take a look at the best players in the draft, Kiper has McGlinchey number 24,
right,
which would be a first-round selection. But when you get into needs of teams, obviously things change. He's listed as the third-best offensive tackle by Kiper behind UCLA's Colton Miller and Orlando Brown of Oklahoma. Now, Notre Dame's Pro Day is coming up on March 22nd. You got the Combine coming up next week. We'll see how much McGlinchey does at the Combine down in Indianapolis. So with this revelation that McGlinchey falls out of a first round of the mock draft, are you surprised? And I'll just basically backtrack and ask you, do you feel like, is this a red flag, or is this just a situation where an individual who breaks down the draft puts players with teams, and there just weren't enough teams that were in desperate need of an offensive tackle to draft Mike McGlinchey in this mock situation?
Let me first preface it by saying I agree with you. This is all going to change when the combine hits. And I'm not sure what Mike McGlinchey has done in the last couple weeks that would drop him from going to the Dolphins at 11 to out of the first round.
He's been eating too many Twinkies. People are concerned.
Yeah, and I think not only will he perform well at the Combine, whatever he chooses to do, I think he's going to interview really well at the Combine.
Oh, without a doubt.
So I didn't get really overly excited about it, and it's not really a consensus. Scott Wright just had his out the other day, and I think he had Mike going 12th. In that draft, and there's going to be a lot of up and down movement. It's just going to be a matter of who's going to be the first tackle off the board, who's the second, and again, we also get to the point where some of these teams may be trying to spill information to Kiper so that he'll change his mock draft to throw other people off the trail. So I don't think he would be a second-round draft choice. I don't think that that's happening unless something weird shows up in his medicals. I don't remember him even being hurt in college. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what he would do performing at either the Combine or the Pro Day that would drop his stock. It just seems, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and went, okay.
The only reason I think he would drop out of the first round, if you take, Eric, the group of teams that are interested in finding that left tackle to start for them for the next 10 years, if they don't believe he's a left tackle, He falls to the second round. If they believe he's a right tackle, that might send him into the second round. I think it comes down to the teams analyzing him, left tackle or right tackle. We saw him play both at Notre Dame 2 years ago when he made the move to left tackle. There were the false start issues. This year he played very, very solid football. I mean, you can nitpick a couple of plays. The Georgia play is always going to come up, I'm sure, in many conversations, or the first thing you think of about Mike McGlinchey. But he played beautiful football for this Fighting Irish football team this year. Eric, I just think the only way this scenario unfolds is that the teams in need of a left tackle don't believe he's a left tackle. I know he can play right tackle in the National Football League. Maybe there is a question about how he would hold up at left tackle.
Yeah, but, you know, some of the analysis I've seen think that he's worth a first-round pick as a right tackle or as a guard. That they think that he's good enough to help teams at those positions and that, you know, again, think about the value you're getting Mike McGlinchey, not just in the football player, but in the person.
True.
And I think that you get added value. You get a leader. You get a guy that could be, you could kind of push out front and be one of the faces of your franchise. I think there's a lot to like about Mike McGlinchey. I think he'd be extremely marketable. You know, I see that Mel kind of went with a, you know, kind of changed it up and put somebody that wasn't in his top three, Garen Christian from Louisville, as the Vikings pick at 30. And in that, he says, keep your eye on McGlinchey and Connor Williams of Texas. He thinks as many as five or six tackles could go on the first day. So, I don't think that he soured on McGlinchey. He did drop him a little bit in his big board from 16 to 24, and Quentin Nelson went up from 8 to 4 in that big board. But I just think at this point, unless something medically comes up or if he just really underperforms at whatever he's going to do, either at Pro Day or the Combine, which is coming up in Indianapolis late next week. I think it's just kind of silly.
I'm sold on him, but I feel like that will be the conversation that will be had, right tackle, left tackle. But
sure.
It just takes one person to love him as a left tackle, and the rest is history. Pro Day for Notre Dame coming up March 22nd. We've mentioned that Malik Zaire is coming back. He's going to be a part of Pro Day. Is this going to be a good situation for someone like Equanimeous St. Brown to have Malik Zaire throwing to him? I mean, is that going to be a good look? Because you need the football thrown well, and I don't mean to criticize, but that's not a strong suit of old number 8 of the Fighting Irish football team. So is this a big deal?
Well, I mean, consider the alternatives. Who would you have throw if it's not Malik? I think at least you're getting a college quarterback with college experience that's, you know, in his low 20s and has played with you before. We saw with Golson, Everett Golson, when he came back, he was really kind of out of sync.
Yes, he was.
I think a lot of it depends upon if Malik gets up to South Bend from Florida early and works out with those guys and gets his timing. But I'll tell you what, given what the alternatives are, I would pick Malik. I'd rather have Malik throwing to me than, you know, some guy they pulled out off the street. You know, I know that Evan Sharpley's done it before, and Evan's done a great job. You know, I would certainly trust him because I know that he would absolutely work with those guys very well and so forth. But other than those two, who would you even think about, you know, getting? You know, I mean, Kaiser's not going to come back and do it with them.
No.
So I think what's interesting too, Darren, is we talk about all this draft stuff and free agent stuff is, what's going to happen to Kaiser? And I was trying to read up on that a little bit, what the Cleveland folks were thinking. You know, is Cleveland going to trade him? Are they going to keep him? You know, is he, you know, destined to be a bench guy now? You know, it's interesting to see what happens to him. I think I'm almost more interested in that than I am how Equanimeous is going to do at the pro day.
Eric, I think it comes down to if Cleveland sees a quarterback that they believe is a franchise quarterback that can lead them for 8 to 10 years, they have to take him. Have to. When you're sitting at number one, and if your guy is there that you believe is the player that can take you to the next level, or in the Browns' case, six or seven levels up the chain, you have to take him. You have to. They have bypassed quarterbacks that you look back on now and you scratch your head. What are they thinking? I'm not saying there's a franchise quarterback in this group. I'm not sold on that. But in Cleveland's eyes, Eric, if that guy is there, they have the number one pick, they have to take him. If they don't believe that franchise quarterback is there, I know they have a lot of picks early on, but I think you have to really take a look at your options in moving down a couple of spots and getting someone else that can really help your football team, because that number one spot with all these quarterbacks is going to be extremely valuable. So I really don't know, Eric, if Kizer plays that much into their thinking right now, because I think we'd all agree at this stage, no one is seeing Deshaun as a franchise quarterback in the NFL. He's a young guy that struggled with turnovers. He actually ran the ball pretty well with Cleveland, but his throwing was very inconsistent, did not have great tools around him on the offensive side of the football. But I don't know that I've read from any of the Cleveland media that they saw anything or enough from Kizer this year to make them believe that he is the future. No one is pounding the table for Deshaun Kizer in Cleveland right now. So that is what makes me believe, Eric, if their guy is there, if their can't-miss quarterback is there, they have to take him at number one.
Well, what if you let me ask you this. What if you signed Kirk Cousins or signed a free agent veteran quarterback? Then would you still and Mel Kiper, by the way, has Josh Allen going number one to Cleveland, which I think is interesting. That wouldn't be my pick of those quarterbacks. I think I would still take Darnold with his turnovers because I know that Deshaun Watson had that issue his senior year at Clemson, and he was able to clean it up with the Houston Texans, partly because Will Fuller was on his team.
I know Cleveland has a boatload of cap room. They got a lot of money to throw at a guy like Kirk Cousins. But Eric, in my opinion, I don't see why Cleveland would sign a high-end veteran quarterback and then take their franchise quarterback in their eyes at 1.1.
Right.
That defeats the purpose. Now, if you want to sign a secondary-level veteran quarterback and then draft your guy at one, I think that makes a lot of sense. But even with their cap room, I don't see why you would draft Kirk Cousins and then draft Josh Allen at number one. That defeats the purpose, and I just don't think that makes any sense to go that particular direction. So, to me, you got to take your quarterback at one if you believe he is the guy. If he's not the guy, don't take a quarterback just to take a quarterback. They went with Tim Couch, number one, many moons ago out of Kentucky, and that was an absolute disaster for that franchise. But for Kizer, I think he just has to sit and wait, and his opportunity to prove everybody wrong will be when the football season comes around, when practice gets underway. He will have the ability to prove to that coaching staff that he can get better, he can lead this football team, but the Browns cannot sit and hope and pray that Deshaun Kizer improves 40% over last year. They can't do that. When you're sitting at number one, you have to totally evaluate the quarterback situation, and whether Deshaun likes it or not, they have to do what's best for their franchise. And if it's taking a quarterback, if they see their franchise guy, there is nothing that should stop them from taking that guy.
But do they see that? That's the thing. Do they see that in this quarterback class? And if not this year, who's on the horizon? Who do you see in college right now who you're saying, okay, that's...
Well, this is supposed to be the big year.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the big year.
It feels like there's a lot of depth, but Eric, is it quality depth? It almost feels like quantity over quality right now.
Well, when you look at the other position players, you see players that are more surefire picks. Like, when you think of Bradley Chubb and Minka Fitzpatrick and Saquon Barkley, you feel like those are much safer picks.
Quentin Nelson.
Right, Quentin Nelson. You feel like those are much safer picks than
all pro.
The quarterbacks.
He's going to be battling Zach Martin for all pro at the guard position.
And I think it's interesting Mel had Baker Mayfield at 6 to the Jets. I went, wow, has he come? I just don't know how he's going to project. He was so good in college, and you know, but it's a different game.
Their offense makes you nervous, what they ran there.
It does. The thing that I did like about him was the two times that he faced really good pass defenses, Ohio State and Georgia, he did not have a huge problem against either one of them. So I am impressed with that part of it.
Mayfield is the wild card of this draft.
Yeah.
He could go anywhere. He could go absolutely anywhere. I think Darnold, Allen, Rosen, they're going to be in a ballpark area, but Mayfield, with coming from the Oklahoma offense, and let's face it, there's still a little bit of concern about some of the garbage that he did on the football field that was disrespectful. He gets that, fair or not, the Manziel label that he could be that problem child. He's going to have to overcome that, and he can do that in the interviews with the teams at the NFL Combine, and I'm sure he's already started to clean up that process by being down at the Senior Bowl, but fair or not, in the back of NFL executive minds, you have to worry about the personality traits of a guy like Baker Mayfield, let alone coming from an offense at Oklahoma that was not exactly NFL style. So he could go anywhere, but can you imagine him in New York City?
That would be a circus, maybe.
Broadway Baker.
Yeah.
The good and the bad would be exposed, and the New York tabloids would have a ball with Baker Mayfield and vice versa. Couple of Indianapolis Colts news. Andrew Luck was a part of an event. It was videotaped. Peter King from the Monday Quarterback website did an interview with Luck in front of, I believe, Colts fans. And Luck had this to say. Of course, he did not play last year after shoulder surgery in January of 2017. Quote, "Oh, surgery is not an option for me right now. I feel very, very good about where I am. So that ship has sailed in my mind, which is also a bit of a relief. I'm not going to lie." End quote. So that must be good news for Andrew Luck and Colts fans if he's not thinking about another surgery. It is rehab, 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 and the Colts hope to have their quarterback back behind center this fall. And reports have the Colts re-signing kicker Adam Vinatieri to a one-year deal. He's 45 years old, and last year hit 29 of 34 field goals. How about 5 of 6 beyond 50 yards? And if he signs with the Colts, his 13th season with Indianapolis, and you can hear Colts football on 96.1 FM WSBT this fall. 29 minutes after the top of the hour, Eric and Darren with you. Coming up next, we'll talk Notre Dame basketball. Where do the Irish stand with the NCAA tournament right around the corner? We'll just play the words back of Mike Bray, who talked about this the other night following the loss to the Miami Hurricanes. Irish basketball discussion coming up, and then I'm looking forward to the My Five question of the day in about 20 minutes. The top five traits from the 2012 Notre Dame football team that could show up with this year's Irish football team. Answers coming up on WSBT. Thank you very much, Abby. It is 27 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you on this Wednesday evening. Tomorrow night at this time, Tyler James will be on the program with his IndyInsider.com football recruiting update. What are the things that we'll talk to him about? His defensive lineman, Hunter Spears, committing to the Fighting Irish just about 24 hours ago. So Hunter Spears, a part of the class of 2019. Four members in that class, all four stars, according to 247sports.com.
And I had a chance to talk to Hunter a little bit last night. I'll have a story up in a little bit that's kind of a broader look at defensive line recruiting, but couple of interesting tidbits about him. He is going to enroll early.
Okay.
Yeah, so that'll help him get a start. He is He has given up basketball and baseball. He's coming back from an ACL tear. And he said 6 weeks ago, basically, is when he started feeling 100% again. He did it in a camp right before his senior year. So left knee. But I talked to Tom Lemming again a little bit about him today. And Tom compares him to Jim Flanagan, who was a...
Oh, wow.
That's a heck of a comparison.
Jeez.
But he says he's really relentless. And this is going off a sophomore film. And that's pretty difficult to be a dominant player as a sophomore in that area. He's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So really good football there. He goes to Sachse High School, just northeast of Dallas. But they're very impressed with this kid. But the thing that was kind of interesting, too, is how much Jacob and Hunter are aware that they are in really good position with a lot of other defensive linemen and how hard these guys want to make it happen and work on it. And it could be very similar to the Tuitt, Lynch, Williams class that had a lot of other defensive ends in it. Now, there's not a five-star at this present time. Some of these guys may move up, and Hunter could certainly be one of those guys moving up, maybe not to five-star level, but up in the higher four-star tiers just because he hasn't played since his sophomore year. People need to see him in camps and see him on see his senior film and so forth, but... Notre Dame is in really good position with a lot of elite defensive ends and defensive tackles. And if things fall right, this could be, I think, certainly the best, maybe better than the 2011 class, given the fact that Tuitt was really the only guy that contributed to the 2012 run. Lynch transferred. Ishak never kind of blossomed. Ben Council, Anthony Rabassa, Troy Nicholas flipped over to offense. Tony Springham got hurt. So a lot of those guys, that's why you got to get them in numbers because things happen. You know, guys get hurt, guys blossom. And Darren, I think it's a really difficult position to evaluate because so many of the kids, you have to project more. This guy is... Not Hunter, but some guys are like 6 foot six and 220. How's that guy going to play when he's 6'7", 270?
And how many Division I offensive linemen do they go up against?
Yeah, exactly. And so another thing, you know, when I was doing my research is when you look at the AP All-America team from this year, the first teamers, 3 3-stars and 1 4-star on that first team. You look at Mel Kiper's top 10 defensive tackles, top 10 defensive ends. Of those 20 players, 11 were 3 stars or lower.
Wow.
So it's hard. It's difficult to project. And Tom Lemming said it's absolutely the most important position group in college football.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
So I should not ask you the follow-up question. Since Spears is enrolling early, should we expect him to find his way into a playing role in 2019?
Well, I mean, it's hard to tell, but you certainly...
There's an opportunity.
There's opportunity, but you also look at, you know, he's going to be... You're going to lose Jay Hayes. I'm starting to try to do the math. Because he's either going to be that... defensive end that's the bigger defensive end that's not quite the explosive pass rusher. So you're talking Jay Hayes, Khalid Kareem, that side. And there's an opportunity there because you think about who's behind that. Maybe Adi Ogundeji at that side. So there's some opportunity there. They don't really have, you know, Justin Adamalola would fit that profile. But he may eventually be an inside guy. And then Hunter may be an inside guy. He may be at the Jerry Tillery now. Jerry Tillery's moved to the defensive tackle. But Jerry Tillery, Myron Tagovailoa, you know, that group. Because there's not a lot of great depth there. But you've got Jacob Lacey, who's a nose guard. Jamian Franklin, who's a nose guard. Jason Adamalola will be at that defensive tackle. And he may be a guy that... works his way into the rotation. You got Darnell Ewell at nose guard. You see, they're starting to stack these guys, and there's quality and quantity. Notre Dame has had quantity. They haven't had the quality since Mike Elston was the defensive line coach the last time.
So he could be a strong side defensive end.
a strong side defensive end or a defensive tackle.
Right.
He's right now 6'4", about 267, and we'll see how much he grows in the coming year.
Probably has not gone to a rivals camp because they have him as a weak side defensive end.
They have him as a weak side. I thought that was kind of interesting. But I talked to him and I said, what has Notre Dame told you? And he said, these are the two positions that they project me that they think are most likely. And he was pretty excited about it.
That story coming up soon at IndyInsider.com and in tomorrow's
South Bend Tribune.
All right, there you go. So look forward to that in the South Bend Tribune. Eric and Darren with you. Let's get to a little Fighting Irish basketball talk. 20 minutes in front of the top of the hour. The Fighting Irish, a couple of nights ago, fell at home to the Miami Hurricanes 77-74, and this was Mike Bray's reaction to that loss.
We gave ourselves a chance, but sometimes you got to take your hat off to the other team. I thought Walker's shots were backbreakers, and they were pretty tough shots, and we couldn't keep the big fella off the backboard. That really hurt us. So disappointing, because we really wanted to try and see if we could go 2-0 on a Saturday, Monday, but couldn't get it. And I thought Miami, you know, played brilliantly. They're a really gifted team.
The injuries have been the storyline of the year for this basketball team, but you think back through the Mike Bray era, this team has played phenomenal basketball at Purcell Pavilion, but in this case, they were unable to get to the finish line as they lost to the Hurricanes by 3 points. And here's Coach Bray talking about not being able to close out this game on their home floor.
Yeah. It's frustrating. I think that's why Maddie was so frustrated. And I was really disappointed, too, walking off, because we've been able to close them out, but not this year. Haven't been able to do it this year. We got one more home game. So, I'm hoping we're playing a little better away from here, you know, after how we played in Boston. But we'll have a tough chance. You know, everything's been hard for this team from day one, even when we were healthy. And so it's hard. I give them credit, man. They'll come back to work tomorrow and be, what do we need to do, coach? They've been awesome that way. And so, you know, when you're, you know, they picked me up many times where you're like, God, come in and they're like bouncing around and they're energized. You feel like, okay, you know, I got a little more juice today.
Fighting Irish at Purcell Pavilion in conference games this year, 4-4. The four losses by a total of 13 points. North Carolina, Louisville, Virginia Tech, and Miami. Just unable to pick up those key victories at home. And with the difficulty to win on the road of the ACC, when you go 4-4 on your home floor, unfortunately, 6-9 conference records stare at you in the face. So that's where they are right now. Tomorrow is supposed to be the return of Bonzi Colson to the practice floor. So that should lift up the guy's emotions a tad bit. And I'm not sure if Rex Pfluger is going to practice tomorrow. I would assume there's a chance because Mike feels like that he's going to be able to go Saturday at Wake Forest. So if it's not tomorrow, it's probably going to be Friday for Rex Pfluger. So 6-9 is where they stand. Can they win their last three to get to 9-9, which kind of gets you into the bubble conversation for the NCAA tournament? The first two, very winnable, at Wake Forest, home against Pittsburgh. The third, tough task at number one, Virginia. So where do the Irish stand right now? The head coach of the Fighting Irish is about to tell you.
We got still playing basketball, baby. You know, still playing. We got to play it out. We're going to play it out. I got no predictions. I got no crystal ball where we're at. You somehow get to 8 league wins before you go to Brooklyn and Bonzi's healthy, then you'd have to do something there. But we also could be an NIT team. That may not be bad for this team either if we get everybody back. So we're very realistic where we're at, baby. Very. What's that?
About 8 wins going to Virginia.
8 wins going to Virginia would be great. But that'll be hard. You know, I think we'll have Rex back Saturday. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, again, you can still keep grinding. This isn't a bad loss, but you need to get another quality win on your resume, and we couldn't get it. So that's kind of exhausting for us.
All right, the comments of Mike Bray on where they stand. It's tough to sugarcoat it. It's really difficult to put on a happy face right now, considering where this team stands. They don't deserve this fate, considering all the injuries they've had to deal with this year, but no one's going to feel sorry for them across the country, and they're just going to have to figure out a way to at least go 2-1 and then try to do something special in Brooklyn. And if it's not enough, it's not enough, and it's a shame for the senior class. That's the part that bugs me more than anything else, is that this senior group has been a part of so much success and helping this program, Eric, get over obstacles that have bothered Irish fans for so many years.
Right.
Getting to the second weekend, getting to the Elite Eight, having a chance to go to a Final Four, back-to-back Elite Eights, and this team broke a huge barrier of winning an ACC championship. Which, when you enter the ACC, did you feel like Notre Dame was going to be battling for ACC championships? They nearly won another one. They've got one in their back pocket. So, Eric, that's the part that really stinks about this whole thing. For the senior class, they have accomplished so much. And as I talked about last night with Tom, though, I just have a hard time asking that senior group to finish their careers in the NIT if that's the end result. Now, if they want to play with each other one more time, Farrell and Bonzi, totally get it. I'll shut up. But I just feel like they have accomplished so much, and to have to play in the NIT to wrap it up, that's hard. That's just a lot to ask.
You know, there are two tournaments that are actually below the NIT.
I don't even want
to. I know. They're even worse.
You have to pay to get in those.
But here's the thing that I would add to what the senior class has done. I think they made Notre Dame basketball cool, because you look at what's coming next year, the best recruiting class since when, Darren? Since the 70s? I mean, at Notre Dame. And then you have transfer Juwan Durham joining this group, and some pretty good players coming back.
So maybe since Murphy Graves, that group?
I would say, at least, you know, certainly have that in the conversation. We'd have to get Tom's opinion. I actually was the beat writer when that class was being assembled, and then Tom took over. But it's a tremendous class, and then you pair it with, you know, TJ Gibbs and some of these, and you think, you know, these guys open people's eyes. I think, you know, getting to the lead eights and the brand of basketball they play, and Mike Bray's personality, I mean, all those things. And I don't think you hear a lot of fans grumbling. I think everybody kind of understands.
They understand.
Yeah, they get it. The year that Grant was out, they didn't
understand.
Second
semester.
That. Yeah, they wanted Mike gone. But this year, I think they get it. So
I mean, what can you do?
Yeah.
When pretty much half of your roster has been hurt, at least at some point during the year, you just can't, any program, you can't ask your number 8, 9, and 10 players on your roster to play 15, 20 minutes a game. It's just not something that's going to happen, bottom line. And they've done the best they could. Again, they have not been blown out. It's not like this team is getting embarrassed. They're in all these games. Other than NC State on the road, they're right there at Duke, Carolina. They're there in the second half. They just have not been able to close off games. And again, the home losses are the ones that just drive a stake into your heart. Unable to win those games. The ball that bounced off the rim against Carolina. Are you kidding me? That goes in. All of a sudden, this looks a lot different. I mean, there's a big difference right now between 7-8 and 6-9.
Yeah.
Because then you beat Wake Forest and Pitt, there's your 9 wins. And then at least you're in the conversation. That doesn't guarantee a trip to March Madness. But you're right there. And the bubble stinks every year. The bubble is awful. It's full of bad teams. And a Notre Dame team without their star most of the year that gets him back and plays well, I think they have an advantage over some of those teams if the resumes are similar.
Well, how many games do you think minimally Will the committee get to see Bonzi play? Will it be three or four?
Well, if Mike is right, he comes back for Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Then you get him for Virginia, there's two. And you get him at least for one game in the ACC tournament, there's three.
Okay, now, as they're seeded today, would they play a team below them or a team higher than them in the seedings, do you know?
Well, they're pretty much locked in to that first day matchup. And let me double check the standings right now. I have not looked since last night's action. So right now, the Irish are the 11 or 12 seed, depending on the tiebreaker between Boston College and Notre Dame. They split their matchups. So you would play a team that would be below you.
Well, then that gives you a little bit of, then you're probably looking at four games minimally with Bonzi, which
fair, yeah.
Yeah, which would, I think, be a good gauge for the committee, especially if Notre Dame became a stronger team with each game that Bonzi played. You know, that Bonzi, you know, was in a better rhythm with each game, then I think, you know, if somehow they were 8-10 and went on a little mini run to the ACC through the ACC tournament, but that's asking a lot. We're getting into big ifs and so forth, but it's just going to be interesting to me what that team looks like with Bonzi Colson back and what he's going to look like. I think that's fascinating.
If you are the 11 seed, you would play the 14 seed. That would be Wake Forest.
Okay.
And if you're the 12 seed, you would play the 13 seed Georgia Tech. You went 1-1 against Georgia Tech, and you're probably going to beat Wake Forest on the road on Saturday. So, yeah, those are very, very winnable games. And let's just use the argument they're the number 11 seed, and they take out their first-round opponent. That would put them in a matchup the next night against the number 6 seed in the tournament, and that would be either Virginia Tech or Louisville. That's doable.
Okay.
That's doable.
That's doable.
We're dreaming big here now.
Yeah.
We're just saying, hey, those are winnable games.
Yeah.
All right. Let's say you win that. Let me look at my bracket here. So that would be game 7 winner would go up against the number 3 seed on Thursday in the quarterfinals, and that would be North Carolina.
Okay, then you'd say probably bye-bye at that point.
Well, they've been competitive.
Yeah.
They've been there. And so since you're on that side of the bracket, you would get Duke in the semifinal.
Yeah, you wouldn't play Virginia till the very last.
So there's a positive.
There's positive.
That's the only team that just scares the daylights out of you just because they squeeze your neck with that defense. So if you get Wake Forest and then Virginia Tech, there's a chance to get to the quarterfinals.
Yep.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm not saying that. I just think it's interesting because I can't wait to see what this team looks like with Bonzi playing. Sometimes it's hard to add that guy back in right away and make it a smooth transition because roles change and flow and chemistry and so forth. So it's
funny,
interesting.
Funny you brought that up because I actually was talking to the voice of the Irish, Jack Nolan, about this the other day, and we brought up Herengody, who was injured. And remember, the Irish went on like a 7-8-9 game winning streak, whatever it was. They go into the NCAA tournament. They lose to Old Dominion. Herengody comes back and scores like 2 points. They had changed the offense so much.
Yeah.
They went to the burn.
Yeah.
He didn't fit. Yeah. So here's the difference. Bonzi's coming back to the same offense. So this is going to be a different and much easier transition than what Herengody went through. Plus, I think Colson's a better player than Herengody.
I would agree. And I would agree. I just think it's going to be kind of fun. I mean, I'm not thinking anything higher than the NIT or, but I still think it would be fun just to see these games.
Hey,
it's interesting.
Mike Bray would say, let her rip, baby.
Hey, you know what? They're old. They're men.
And I love those guys. They're going to put forth the effort. Let's see what they can get done in Brooklyn. First things first, win at Wake Forest Saturday at 3 o'clock here on WSBT Radio. We're going to jam in the My 5 question of the day next on WSBT.
Let One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
We're talking football today and the top five traits from the 2012 Notre Dame football team that played for the national championship that could show up in this year's squad. Five answers coming your way, starting with number five.
Well, I slanted these all toward the defense, and on the defense you had a guy that postponed, and it looked like he was going to go. In fact, his parents thought he was going to go to the NFL draft. It was Manti Te'o. He came back for his senior season. You have two players on this defense, Tillery and Coney, that did the same thing.
Number four.
Number four, that this is going to be the stronger side of the football. I think even if Notre Dame gets really good quarterback play, the defense is going to drive this train this year.
Top five traits from the 12 football team that could show up in the 18 Irish. Number three.
Well, on defense, you are counting on some guys to have breakthrough years. In 2012, the guys were Tuitt, Nix, Spond, and Capron Lewis Moore. And you're going to be looking at Dalen Hayes, guys like Dalen Hayes and Jonathan Bonner and really whoever's going to play safety for you. So you're going to have to be counting on some quantum improvement, even though you have 10 starters coming back.
Number two.
Experience. And this team actually has more experience with those 10 starters. But again, you know, Clark Lee is moving some people around. They're not all at the same positions. There's guys challenging other people. But experience really helped that team. They were very poised.
And the number one trait from the 12 team that could show up in the 18 squad.
Well, I think on this side of the ball, I think on offense, it's going to be interesting to see who the leaders are. But on defense, I think you have them in spades. You have Julian Love. You have Drew Tranquil. You have Dalen Hayes. You could probably add Coney and Tillery to that list as well. So you'll have strong leadership.
That's the My Five Question of the Day from 96.1 FM WSBT. We're 30 seconds away from Eric's vacation and what's coming up in the South Bend.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
We'll have coverage of the Bethel men's basketball team playing in the Crossroads Leagues tournament. I have a big picture recruiting story we talked about a little bit earlier, Hunter Spears and the defensive line for Notre Dame football. Anthony will have the advance on Notre Dame women, Virginia Tech. Finn has a feature on LaVille's perfect record and much, much more.
Enjoy your time off.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Well, I guess you're going to hear a lot of that over the next few days because Eric's going to enjoy some vacation time, so Sean's going to be jumping on board the 5 o'clock hour for the next 4 or 5 days, I guess.
I heard the rumor that he's going back to Norway is completely false. So, but it was like Norway around here for a while.
Norway does not need any help winning any medals right now,
man,
in the Olympics. They are absolutely cleaning up.
Whoa.
The United States?
Not so much.
The U.S. hockey team was, woof. If it wasn't for the college kids, which was basically the top line of Donato and Terry, I mean, that was not a very entertaining hockey team. I mean, without the NHL players and without using all college players, it was just a grab bag, and it just, You know how much I love hockey? It was almost unwatchable for me. Just, I think I was spoiled watching the NHL players for so long, and I have a passion for college hockey. I wish we would just go back to like when the 80 team won the gold medal, and it's going to be very difficult to win the gold using college players, and I hate to give up college players during the season, but what we saw, that I'm sorry, that's not acceptable.
You've answered most of my questions, but at the same time, so... Was this an NHL decision to not use NHL play? I kind of assumed it was. You risk injury.
Well, I don't think they like breaking up their season, first off. And yeah. There was a player that got injured 4 years ago that started the conversation. And honestly, I'm going to take a step back as a hockey fan. You're not in the same category as me. Honestly, the last few Olympics... Having the NHL players play in the Olympics, did the NHL get a big boost in people wanting to watch NHL hockey after watching basically all-star games during the Olympics? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Yeah. I don't think so.
If anything else, fans were probably frustrated because they couldn't go see their teams because they had to shut down for, three weeks or something like that, so...
It was cool to have them in the Olympics, but I didn't like sitting out for 3 weeks of the NHL. It just breaks the flow of the season. I just don't think the NHL got enough out of having their players in the Olympics. I just don't think there was that much added value. Now, if people started watching more NHL games because of the Olympics, fine, shut down the league for 3 weeks, but I just don't think there was any significant increase in people wanting to watch NHL games because of the Olympics.
The equivalent from a baseball standpoint, and basketball and football obviously don't do anything like this, but the equivalent, I think, would be, I guess, basketball. Obviously, they have the Olympics, but it's at a different time of year. They don't have to worry about their season, but it would be like baseball shutting down in July to do the...
World Baseball Classic.
Yeah. And I know they've kind of talked about that before so that they're not extending at the start and all that. But it would just be a nightmare because of the fact you've still got to get in your 162 games. But and same deal. I don't think that it would do baseball. They wouldn't get any more out of it. I don't think hockey gets any more out of it. But at the same time, for the most part, the U.S., has done a little bit better. They've got a couple silver medals in the 2000s anyway with the NHL players playing, which is the best they've done since 1980.
Great gold medal game against Canada that went into overtime, one of the better games that really has taken place in the Olympics in a long time.
Right.
But did the NHL get a big boost out of that?
I don't think so.
There might have been a buzz.
Yeah, NHL just doesn't benefit enough from it.
I'll be the first to admit, as a diehard NHL fan, I totally understand the fans that want nothing to do with the regular season and turn it on for the postseason because the hockey is so much better in the postseason. A lot of the garbage that happens during the regular season doesn't happen in the postseason because one penalty can make the difference in you going home because one special team's goal can make such a huge difference in a hockey game. The foolish penalties sort of go away and you're playing true hard-nosed hockey. The postseason in the NHL is terrific. The regular season leaves a lot to be desired, I think, for a lot of fans. And I totally get that. But give me the Stanley Cup playoffs any day. It's quite a ride. And let's face it, you can shut down the NHL for a couple of weeks for the Olympics. You can play in June and July. You're indoors. Major League Baseball can't shut down for 3 weeks because you're not going to play baseball in November in Boston and New York, Chicago. It's not going to be a whole lot of fun. It's going to be 1-0 games. If you want pace of play, play in November and December when it's going to be everybody swinging at the first pitch they see.
There you go.
And it's going to be an hour and a half games, and let's go home.
There it is.
I just solved the problem.
I think you did.
Play in December. There you go, Rob.
You can never play in America, but play... because there aren't enough dome stadiums anymore.
No,
but
let's just play outdoors. We'll make the games fast.
There you go. They can throw snowballs while they're at it.
This pace of play stuff is giving me such a headache.
I know.
I admit, traditionalist, I don't like things changing. Although, I did like the idea of the wild card years ago. I thought that was going to be good for baseball. And I absolutely loved when they added the second wild card because it just brings so many fans keeping them locked in with baseball in August and September when it's easy to forget about baseball when college football starts. So it keeps a lot more teams involved in the postseason push, and it keeps people coming to the ballpark, which is good for ticket sales and good for the players and good for the owners.
Yep, definitely does on all counts. The downside, I think, is, and I don't know how much this matters, you don't see much, I don't think we've seen as much player movement at the trade deadline the last couple of years. I don't know if that's good, that's bad. If you're a fan of a team who makes a trade, gets a big player at the deadline, you get a little boost of adrenaline and excitement and all that kind of stuff. Your team's in there and making a run, but it is definitely cut back on that, I think.
I'm going off the script here for a second.
Okay.
This was from NBC Sports Chicago.
All right.
They interviewed Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras about the new rule in which a team can only have 6 mound visits total. Players, infielder, catcher, manager, pitching coach, that's all you get in 9 innings. After that, I don't really know what the penalties are going to be yet. There's a little confusion about that, but here's what Contreras had to say about this new pace of play initiative by Commissioner Rob Manfred.
The 6 mound visit's going to be an issue, you think, or you've figured it out?
I've been reading a lot about this rule, and I don't really care what they have. You know, if you have to go again and pay the price for my team, I will. There's 6 mound visit. What about if we have a tie game or an extra inning game and I have to go out there? They cannot say anything about that. It's my team, and we just care about win. And then if they're going to fine me about the number 7 mound visit, I'll pay the price.
Well, there's no talk about fines, but there could be ejections. That's being talked about.
Really? See, and that's what I was going to say. I haven't really heard what the penalty is if you exceed it.
Well, here's the problem. Manfred and Joe Torre are saying kind of different things right now. It could be just a ball. That's worth going to the mound and breaking the rule. You know, if you're serious, make a defensive team get 4 outs in a half inning. If we're going to be stupid about all this stuff,
give them an extra out.
Give them an extra out for the hitters, or just eject the player who goes to the mound.
But then you're just extending more time onto things if you make them get the extra out, right?
Well, they're also saying that you have to do a pitching change if you go out for a 7th time. So how's that good for baseball when you have no one warming up in the bullpen? You're going to ask someone cold to come in and throw? Injuries happen? Bad for baseball.
Yeah.
Bad. So give us what's going to happen. It's got to be harsh or everybody's going to break it. They're not going to care.
No, that's exactly right.
They're not going to care. So Wilson's ready to pay a fine. He doesn't care.
$5,000 fine, possibly, or $1,000 even per infraction that goes to the team. I don't know.
If they're going to do this, make it harsh or everybody's going to work a way around it. You know what's going to happen? This isn't against the rules. By this new pace of play initiative. If you cannot visit the mound, who's to say the catcher could not walk down to first base and talk to the first baseman, and the shortstop walk over to first base and talk to the catcher and the first baseman?
Do a little walk around the infield.
And then they'll just relay what they're going to do to the pitcher, and that way you don't have to go to the mound to have that conversation.
Well, for that matter, the catcher, assuming you can figure out how to do this with either signs or some kind of coded verbiage, or I mean, he could stand there at the plate and yell whatever he wants and still communicate a lot of this stuff. It's just a lot easier to walk out to the mound right now and say second side, third sign, whatever it happens to be.
Opening day, please, some team, have all the infield and the catcher go to first base and have a conversation. And that just slows the game down, and there's no rule that says you can't do that.
That's right.
Just stick it to the commissioner's office. So, I'm telling you, this takes the cake. I'm going to play a piece of audio, and this is from the Rich Eisen Show on WSBT Radio. And Rich is an NFL guy, works for the NFL Network, but he was apparently talking to someone within baseball. And the story he is going to tell supposedly has some validity to it. I can't believe it. So I'm going to play this soundbite.
I think, I don't know exactly what this is. You put a note on here that you had some audio that you're going to play. You wanted me to hear it. I think that I heard it. This was If it's what I think it is, this was on the rapid fire list last night, but we didn't get to it. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see if it's the same thing. I think I know where you're going with this, okay, but we'll find out.
So this is about 3 minutes long because you have to allow Rich to tell the story, and then there's a little conversation amongst the Eisen group.
And that would be part of why we didn't get to it last night, because there's a lot of information that goes with this thing.
All right, so bear with the storytelling. Rich will eventually get to this supposed rule that's being talked about for Major League Baseball. If you're a traditionalist, it's going to be like fingernails down a chalkboard. If you're a young person that maybe wants to see change, you may absolutely love this.
Yeah.
Give a listen. This is from the Rich Eisen Show on WSBT Radio.
There is a rule that has been whispered, discussed. Again, I am not familiar as to how close this would be to reality, but there are some who are discussing this. And here is the rule that I think would absolutely inflame traditionalists. But once you hear it, and I know you're a traditionalist over there, okay?
I am.
Rockman.
I am.
Well, once you hear it, soak
yes.
it in.
Yes, I am, Rich.
Because baseball is truly the only sport where game on the line, final inning, any other sport, final seconds, baseball is the only sport where by mere randomness and happenstance because of a batting order, the best players are not out on the field with the game on the line. Potentially, you're down by two, ninth inning, you've got 7, 8, 9 up. And that's the way it's got to be,
goes, man.
Right? And you can pinch hit, but sometimes your best hitters are not coming off the bench because your best hitters are your 3-4 hitters who, because of randomness, are not up with the game on the line. Here's the rule change. In the ninth inning only, not eighth inning, not seventh, not extras, ninth inning only, you are allowed to send up to the plate as your first three hitters, whoever you want.
Ooh.
Whether they have just played.
Oh, yeah.
So if 3, 4, 5 goes out in order in the eighth inning, ninth inning, your manager sends 3, 4, 5 right back out there. And then 6 goes and 7 goes and 8 goes. And if it goes into extra innings, they haven't figured out what it would be. Do you pick it up from
the eighth?
From the eighth, or do you pick it up from where it left off, that you recreate the batting order in the ninth inning that goes now for the rest of the game?
Stop it.
So just for a perfect example, Yanks are down by 2 or 3, ninth inning, and Aaron Boone gets to put Sanchez, Stanton, Judge up there. Put them up against your closer.
But say you have a no-hitter going, right? And the idea is that you've thrown this great game, this great no-hitter that you have going. What if it's a perfect game? 7, 8, 9. Those are the easiest batters traditionally in the lineup. You're now penalized for having such a great performance through 8 innings by having to get out the 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 4, whatever. That's preposterous.
I'm reading to you from the executive in baseball. Best argument is that no other sport has the best players sitting on the bench in the final minutes of a game. Imagine LeBron or Tom Brady or Sidney Crosby or Ronaldo watching on the sideline.
That's not the makeup of baseball, though. That's totally different in those sports. That is a apples to bowling balls argument.
The field has the best players. Why not the batters?
That's how baseball has been constructed for 150 years. That this is the lineup.
I kind of dig it.
Oh,
I
no like it.
Rich.
I like it.
Rich.
Straight from a football guy. I like it.
So in the ninth inning, you can bat whomever you would like. But if you tie the game and it goes into extra innings, then you go back to where you left off in the eighth inning. Please stop. Can you imagine how slow the game is going to be when you try to figure out who's batting where? Oh, my.
Well, yeah, goodness. And then so what happens after you make these substitutions if you continue to the next inning or whatever? Then who bats at that point? Where do you pick up after these first three? just a whole, and while we're at it, are we going to institute other little league and high school rules?
Reentry.
We're going to have reentry now. We're going to have courtesy runners for the pitcher and catcher. I mean, this is professional baseball, and I can't fathom this at all.
Have the baseball executives lost their mind over the last few months?
Do they think that people are watching baseball? People are paying to go to baseball games. I don't get where this national crisis of baseball, where this idea comes from.
You want people to watch more playoff games? Don't start them at 8:30 Eastern time.
That's it.
Kids are in bed before first pitch on the East Coast and in the Central time zone. They get to see a few innings. If you want people to love the great American pastime again, the most important games need to be viewed by all.
Or for that matter, how about in L.A., where Dodgers games have been blacked out for I don't know how many years.
Unbelievable.
Market number freaking 2 in the country. How about you make sure that baseball games are on TV in Los Angeles? If you really care that much, if you want more people exposed to baseball. Because we're already going, as you said, with the start times of these playoff games and the World Series and everybody else, it's so that Los Angeles, so that people working in Los Angeles can get home and watch the games at 5:30, 6 o'clock, or whatever. And most of them aren't watching out there anyway because they've got other things to do in Los Angeles.
If we are allowed to be nitpicky, actually, the National Football League, you don't have the best players on the field because Tom Brady would not be on the field if the New England Patriots on defense.
That's right. By happenstance, by who happens to have the ball at the end of the game.
Right.
As what Rich wanted to say with happenstance of the batting order.
And so if we go with this ridiculous idea, Francisco Cabrera's miraculous base hit in the 1991 National League Championship Series, Game 7 for Atlanta against Pittsburgh, a guy who batted, 30 times the whole year, base hit through the left side, Sid Bream, bumbling, stumble around third, scores the game-winning run to send the Braves to the World Series. Francisco Cabrera wouldn't have sniffed home plate in that magical moment. 1987 World Series. Tom Lawless with one of the great bat flips in World Series history. This utility player for St. Louis homers against the Twins. That moment never happens, possibly. Now, that wasn't in the ninth inning, but Cabrera's was. So it's almost just blowing my mind that we have to change baseball rules for the ninth inning now. That's right. The newest thing we have to change. I don't know when baseball became uncool. I have no idea. But people are just overthinking things. The game is beautiful the way it is. Again, if you want to pick up the pace of games, have hitters get back to being hitters and not swinging from their heels with two strikes. Put the ball in play because strikeouts are slowing down the game because at-bats are going longer, and that's leading to more time going by. And with guys going deep into at-bats, you try to find the best analytics possible for a matchup in the seventh inning. So you got a lefty up, you bring in a lefty to go up against that left-hander. That slows the game down. So baseball evolving has slowed itself down.
Mookie Wilson, I think, fouled off five or six pitches before the infamous Bill Buckner play. I mean, he probably strikes out on like the second foul ball rather than hitting all those foul balls. I don't get it. You know, again, you might as well have re-entry. And as you said, Sid Bream put a fast runner in there and run for him instead. Rich Eisen didn't make this up either. According to him, he got this from a baseball executive, that this is something that's seriously being floated out there. That's what I don't get this at all. I completely agree with what you're saying. Go back to a more fundamental baseball game. And we were talking about some of this stuff last night when we were talking about these pace of play initiatives. Have less, cut down on how much you're allowed to shift your infield. Let balls in play. Let them have a chance to either be a hit or an error rather than a ball hit right at somebody. At least put limits on that. I think that would go a lot further than any of this other stuff.
Analytics run the game, so No problem in my eyes bringing Jimmy Dugan back, the great manager of the Rockford Peaches, to manage a major league team because he could fall asleep with a dugout and would not miss a doggone thing.
No.
Because the analytics take care of everything now. You just want a manager to run the clubhouse. That's what's happened. What happened to the guy sitting in the dugout with a big chew in his mouth? You know,
Chew's 70, not allowed either.
He's like, you know, an older guy that looked like your grandpa.
Right.
That was the manager when I was growing up. Earl Weaver. Remember Harvey Keene,
yeah,
the Brewers manager in the 82 World Series. Had the big old chew in his mouth and limped to the mound.
Gorman Thomas. He wasn't the manager, but he was part of that Harvey's wall bangers with the big gob in his mouth.
Tommy Lasorda. It's changed. It's
really
changed.
Yep.
We have to get to a break. We will talk third base prospects in the Cubs system with Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs next on WSBT. Minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT, your home for the Mike Bray Radio Show, which is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Here on WSBT Radio. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday evening. We keep the baseball talk going. We're joined once again by Tom Uziak, who writes for the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs. We're focusing today on the Chicago Cubs minor league system featuring third baseman. And good luck to all the third basemen in the minor league system as they look up at Chris Bryant as the starting third baseman now and for many years with the Chicago Cubs. And we welcome Tom back to the program. Well, Tom, we'll let you talk about Chris Bryant, what he has meant to this team the last couple of years. But I'd also like to ask you if there would be an injury to Bryant that would cost him a month or two, who is the player next in line to be that everyday guy filling in? Would he be on the Cubs roster when the injury happened, or would you have to go into the minor league system to find that guy?
Well, good morning, good evening, Darren. I think that if something happened with Chris Bryant, like you're asking, similar to what happened to Wilson Contreras last year, where he was gone for an extended period of time, but not necessarily a long period of time, they would try to fill at the major league level with both using Tommy La Stella at third base, and at times Javier Baez. They still have enough depth to move around there with being able to use both Ben Zobrist and Ian Happ at second base, so they can move Baez around if they need him at that position. And they also have a very good hitter in Tommy La Stella. He'd bring a much different dynamic to the team, left-handed hitter who could hit for high average, get on base. That's something that could be helpful for the team if he gets into the lineup. But we're all hoping that Chris Bryant doesn't have that kind of injury.
Tom, what's kind of the next tier right after that as far as guys on the rise?
Well, right behind them at AAA this year is going to be a former South Bend Cub, Jason Vossler. He came up through the system, was first drafted as a middle infielder, moved over to third base when he was over with South Bend, and has risen through the ranks, now ready to go to AAA. Last year he had a breakthrough year as far as power hitting goes. He hit 21 home runs and had 81 RBIs at AA last year. He seemed to find the way to be able to elevate some of his hits that he's gotten him over the fence. The big thing with him is we're going to have to see whether he can do that now in the Pacific Coast League. Being a former middle infielder, he does have some skill. He's developing as a third baseman. He's not quite there. You don't expect the dynamic plays out of him, but he's certainly going to be able to make the same type of plays that you would see out of somebody like Chris Bryant. So that's who I see right now at AAA for the Cubs. He looks like he's a pretty good prospect, but he could also be in the same kind of situation that another prospect a couple years ago, Dan Vogelbach, was in. He was a first baseman, left-handed power hitter, right behind Anthony Rizzo. And there was no place for him to go. The Cubs did make a good deal with him and got Mike Montgomery for Vogelbach. Who knows what they can do if Jason Vossler has the same kind of year in AAA that Vogelbach did.
It's interesting. When he was in South Bend in 2015, I never imagined he would turn into a 21 home run guy, but he has sure done that and now pushing for a spot on the Major League roster in the very near future. Tom, another guy, I got to admit, I had more fun with Jesse Hodges being a part of South Bend for a couple of years than maybe anything else. He is Canadian. He has a great sense of humor. He always made the bus rides a little more interesting. And, you know, it's a guy that seems like he's growing each and every year. What do you feel like he needs to do to continue to move up the chain and make progress?
Well, Darren, you also have to add he has an epic beard. I mean, he's got one of those Grizzly Adam ones going there, too.
Oh, he has epic stories to tell, too, if you ever get the chance. But not many could be used, unfortunately, in print.
With Jesse Hodges, you got to really root for a guy like this who signed as an undrafted free agent. Really big scouting effort that was put in. They found him in a tournament over in Japan. And he's really done a lot as far as to make himself into a third baseman. He's worked very hard on his defense and on his footwork. He's gotten a much better feel at the plate. There was one time, like when he was with South Bend, it was all or nothing with him. He was either going for the fences or striking out. Now he's able to, he's gotten a little bit better of a feel on going the other way. He could develop into some sort of chip for the Cubs down the future if he does the same things that like Jason Vossler did, mm-hmm. be able to look to see how much he can drive and elevate some of his hits that he gets and continue to be strong as a third baseman. There's teams that are always looking for third basemen.
What about Vladimir Galindo? He was a guy who was doing pretty well last year, suffered an injury. Where's he stand right now?
Well, that all depends on how he is from his injuries. Now, I've seen him on Twitter saying that he's ready to go, and he's going to be have to test that in spring training to see whether he's got the mobility and the ability to drive off that leg that he from what I understand, he injured his ankle pretty severely, where it was not only fractured, but it was a displacement on it. So that's going to be a very big test for him. Is how well is he going to be able to push off from that injury? We saw him in the brief time that he was at South Bend do very well, 44 games. He hit .290, had four home runs. He's going to be a power hitter once he gets himself totally healthy and ready to play. We just don't know exactly where he's going to end up right now, depending upon where he is in his rehab.
Tom Usiak, minor league correspondent for the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs, our guest here on WSBT Radio, focusing on third baseman in the Chicago Cubs minor league system. Opening day in sight for the South Bend Cubs. In your estimation, Tom, who might be the starting third baseman on opening day for Jimmy Gonzalez?
I'm looking at a player taken in the eighth round this past year out of MIT, if you can believe that. His name is Austin. I believe the last name is Fillier. It's 22 years old. Every scouting report that I've seen on him marvels on how his approach is at the plate. They say he's very quiet at the plate, has a very... very compact swing, and he really showed that when he was in Eugene last year. He hit .261, .392 on base percentage, six home runs in 49 games. So he has that ability to be able to drive the ball and put the ball into play, get on base. what needs to be worked on for Fillier is his defense. He didn't do too well as a third baseman. Who knows whether he was pressing or not. Also, after a long college season, who knows how much gas was left in the tank for him. We'll have to wait and see how he does in spring training. But he's the person that I think that has got the best chance of taking over third base unless they put Galindo back in South Bend this year.
What about down the road? Who are some other guys we can expect to see at South Bend this year?
Well, there's a couple of players that I've looked at that could end up in the middle infield, third base area. One is 19-year-old Rafael Narea. He jumped last year from the Dominican Summer League up into Eugene. Had a little bit of a hard time there, batting only 237. In 57 games, but he was only 19 years old. If he shows the same amount of improvement that he did from last year to from the year before to last year, excuse me, this year, that you may see him as being a part of the infield mix at South Bend. Another was a 31st round draft pick for last year named Ramsey Romano. The Cubs have selected him twice, and he could play third base, first base. He's also played a shortstop in his career. That's somebody who they might have as a little bit of a veteran 22-year-old guy who come in to help the team. So those two could also possibly end up in South Bend.
All right, Tom, tell our listeners where they can read more of your analysis on the Cubs minor league system.
You can find me at LockedOnCubs.com. Just had an article out on Monday, and we'll be putting another one out this coming week. Most likely we'll have some of the people we just talked about in there. Also, you can see me at Cubs Den. That's at ChicagoNow/CubsDen.com.
Very good. Tom Uziak covers all things in the Chicago Cubs minor league system for the Cubs Den and also now on Locked On Cubs. Tom, greatly appreciate your time as always, and we will talk to you again next Wednesday.
Look forward to it next Wednesday, starting pitching.
All right. Yeah, that could get interesting. South Bend could have a very interesting rotation for the first half of the season. Tom, we'll talk to you then.
All right, talk to you then.
All right, that's Tom Uziak from the Cubs Den and Locked On Cubs. And again, just piecing together conversations, it sure seems like the Cubs rotation could be really, really good. It might be their best rotation since South Bend started housing Cubs players in 2015. Yep. Jose Albertos is a young man with a big upside. We assume will start in South Bend this year. He was in Eugene last year. I know sometimes they like to leave their players down at extended spring training that are high-end because of maybe cold weather here, so that could factor in. But there's a couple of interesting arms that could be here in South Bend. We'll talk about pitching next week. It is 15 minutes in front of the top of the hour, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Thank you. 12 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser on WSBT Radio. Recently, Eric Hansen and I spoke with one of the new members of the Fighting Irish football coaching staff, Terry Joseph. He arrived from the University of North Carolina to take care of the safeties for the Fighting Irish in 2018.
Terry, let's just start with what caught your attention about joining this Notre Dame staff.
You know, I think a chance to compete and recruit on a national level every week. And then, you know, obviously if you take care of your business, you got a chance to win championships. And obviously, I mean national championships. And then, you know, The culture that Coach Kelly's built here, just an opportunity for me as a coach to be a part of it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Coach, I mean, you got jumped right into recruiting before they even announced you and so forth, and you have to know a lot about Notre Dame. I mean, did you know a lot? Did you just, you know, cram and study and so forth? Because you look at the people that were pulled in here, including Boykin here at the end. Obviously, you had something to do with that.
Yeah, you know, first of all, they gave me some resources that I could study on the planes and as we were traveling. But I think the big thing is that I was always with Clark or Ty Light. So that really helped me as far as if somebody asked me a really informational question about our program. But at the same time, I had some relationships with those guys going forward from the other places that I was at, so I was able to kind of parlay off of those and put ourselves in position to close, and today was a good day for us.
Coach Kelly mentioned that Boykin has a chance to be great. What do you see out of him early on as this high school football player making the transition to Notre Dame?
Well, you know, the way football has changed, everybody has to stack the box to stop the run. And so you got to put some guys out there to play some man-to-man. And now you get a guy out there who's long, long arms, knows how to play the ball, wants to compete. So you can put that guy out there and you can feel good about the jump ball. Sometimes you get a guy out there and he can be in great position, but if he's 5'9", with these big receivers, a la the LSU-Notre Dame bowl game, you can lose those things even though you're in pretty good position.
I got a recruiting question, but before I do that, I love Stewart on your team this year. I thought he was outstanding. From Notre Dame signed a kid named Albert Pori out of Louisiana in 1999. They didn't sign another Louisiana kid until 2015, Jerry Tillery. Now, they've gotten a couple to each of these last 2 years. Wondering if you're going to be involved in recruiting that state. It would seem natural. Mm-hmm. And what kind of talent is in Louisiana?
You know, obviously, I have a lot of love for Louisiana. And, yes, you know, I'll be involved in recruiting that state. And I think that's going to be, per capita, one of the most talented states around. I think having somebody who's familiar with it, you can kind of pick your spots and know where the honey hole's at and where you got a guy who's going to be a Notre Dame fit. But the last three guys that they've gotten out of the state, all pretty good gets. And I think at the end of the day, if you can identify them early, find the fit, and develop the relationship, and then the most important thing, make sure you eat mom's cooking when you go in a home visit, you got a chance to get them.
You have to keep them away from the purple, too. Your baseball career was interesting. I got an email from a guy named Dave Tremble. Who said he coached you at single A and double A. Mm-hmm. When you got through with baseball and decided, I'm going to do something else, why football coaching rather than baseball coaching at that point?
So when I finished playing, Coach Hank, my high school coach, he called me and he had a spot teaching business classes, which I had graduated in, coaching both sports. And, you know, as you start coaching football and baseball at the high school level, if you had a great pitcher in high school, you won. If you didn't, you lost. But in football, it was really more the schematics of it, figuring out how to put the guys in position to have success. And that's what the part that I really fell in love with. And that kind of brought me to the football side.
I actually call the South Bend Cubs games here in town, so I'm kind of curious to know how your baseball experience has helped you as a football coach.
You know, first of all, you know, it kind of makes me help the players through tough situations. You know, I always tell the guys play one play at a time, because in the minor leagues, I was literally playing one at bat at a time. And so that's really helped me. And then also, when you play in the minor leagues, it's almost like professional golf. You're on an island by yourself. And so it's the same thing in the secondary, that, hey, you have to do your job to have success. And then, you know, I think always tracking the ball, because, you know, it's no different in baseball than it is on a deep ball in football. So those things have all, you know, helped me out.
When you were at single A with the Cubs, did you play here in South Bend?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the experience? You remember coming here or anything?
Well, the Midwest League was the coldest league I ever played in, so that's what I do remember. But believe it or not, it was the Midwest League was my best statistical year, and if they took out the first month and a half of the season, it would have been really off the charts, because I probably hit about 220 until the weather broke.
I wanted to talk to you about some of the guys that signed today or signed in December, but one guy I wanted to ask you about was Alohi Gilman, who transferred from Navy, tried to get eligibility last year, got turned down for that. Have you had a chance to study him much? What are your impressions of him?
You know, when you watch him, you know, he's a guy who has that uncanny ability to make plays. Very productive, but the most impressive thing to me about him is that when I see him in the weight room, I see him at lunch or at breakfast, the guy's personality says nothing but leadership. Guys flock around him, so I'm excited to help continue to mold him to be a great player for our program. But, I mean, he's already a great kid, so I just want to help him get to that next level.
when you're evaluating the safeties and deciding, you know, do you want this to be an open book, an open competition for everybody, you know, blank slate for the guys that played last year?
Yeah, there's no doubt, because any time you bring in a new coach, you know, everybody wants to pick up a little bit more momentum. And like I told the guys, at the end of the day, the best two guys are going to go out there and play. And then if I feel like we can have a rotation and not a big drop-off, it'll be the best three guys. And then if we can get four, that'll be even better. But at the end of the day, they're going to get the tools that they need to go out and have success. And now it's going to be up to those guys to go out on the field and put that success on film over a long period of time, because we want consistent guys. And the one thing I told them is I want Derek Jeter at safety. I want the guy who makes the play he's supposed to make over and over and over again.
There was some talk about, you know, Bracy can play running back and Wilkins can play wide receiver. Is there any chance you'll lose any of those guys to the offense, or are you saying, hey, I'm new, I'm holding on to these guys, don't take anybody away from me?
Well, I think the trading and the free agent period, that's above my pay grade. So you have to talk to the higher-ups on that one.
With Derek Allen, how college-ready do you think he is? How ready as a contributor do you feel like he can be?
You know, from his physical numbers, he's knocking on the door if he's not already ready. You know, when you watch the tape, he has such a great skill set. I think the big thing is going to be how quick can he pick it up. And there's been nothing that has told any of us that he can't. So coming in, he's going to have every opportunity to be out there September 1st for us. And we're excited about his future here.
Terry Joseph, new safeties coach for the Fighting Irish football team. Couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT. Abby, thank you. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune talks Fighting Irish football recruiting tomorrow night at 5:30. Alec Boziak from Inside the Hole joins us on Friday to talk Indiana basketball.
That's right.
A lot to get to as the week goes on here on WSBT.